The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "The Topic of Cancer: How 2 years of Trial and Error to Eradicate a Global Pandemic Helped Break Down Silos, Refocus Resources, and Pave a Promising New Path in the Battle Against Cancer." And this cover story special report begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, "A Post-Pandemic Roadmap for Care. America's emergence from the COVID-19 crisis has positioned health systems and other care providers with a better understanding of and a renewed focus on where to direct resources in the fight against cancer." Written by Zach Ezone. Despite the number of people dying from cancer dropping 27% from 2001 to 2020, the disease was the second leading cause of death in the U.S. in the latter year. The improvement is encouraging, but there's still a long way to go and more money that needs to be invested in research, says Shane Jacobson, CEO of the Cary-based V Foundation. This need for continued funding comes as healthcare providers across the country face a turning point after the pandemic. As they recalibrate their models based on lessons from the crisis and invest more dollars in both facilities and telehealth. Cancer care is a massive industry and one where the Triangle plays a major role with its high-quality hospitals and reservoir of clinical research companies, and experts say the changes ahead will both benefit patients and help lower costs. At the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, for example, COVID-19 fundamentally upended how the institution's cancer care center runs, fast-tracking changes that have been percolating since well before the pandemic. It caused organizations like Mayo to throw out their old playbooks in favor of new approaches, from prevention to diagnosis to treatment, that are poised to become permanent ways of business. "We had directions we wanted to go in as an institution 10 years down the road, and we're a heck of a lot closer than we ever thought we would be at this point," says Dr. Robert McWilliams, a Mayo Clinic medical oncologist. Meanwhile, Dr. Robert Vunderheide, director of the University of Pennsylvania Abramson Cancer Center, says, "There have been unprecedented changes in cancer care and cancer research with the pandemic. Part of that was not beneficial, and we are recovering, but part of it was eye-opening, and we found new opportunities. The demand has not ebbed. The cancer death rate continues to drop, but the U.S. is projected to see an estimated 1.9 million new cancer diagnoses and 609,360 deaths in 2022 alone, according to the American Cancer Society. Fortunately, ACS CEO Karen Knutson says, "Breakthroughs are coming at a faster rate than ever. And the cancer care industry discovered a new research prototype from the private sector's rapid development of COVID-19 vaccines, bolstered by unprecedented federal dollars. Add in some momentum from the White House's relaunched cancer moonshot, and the opportunity quotient is high." The bad news is that the business is good, says Dr. Louis Weiner, director of Washington, D.C.'s Georgetown Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center and MedStar Georgetown Cancer Institute. "We have no shortage of patients who want to see us," he says. Finding funding for research. Since its founding in 1993 by former NC State University basketball coach Jim Valvano, the V Foundation has awarded about $290 million in grant funding to researchers at National Cancer Institute, designated cancer centers throughout the country. The foundation raises and awards between $25 million and $30 million a year, and its goal is to reach $100 million annually by the end of this decade. Through multiple grant types, the foundation supports young researchers with the aim to fund high-risk, high-reward research that can lead to improved cancer outcomes, says Dr. Susanna Greer, the new chief scientific officer at the V Foundation. These grants range in sizes, but researchers can use this funding to gather data before applying for larger grants from the places such as the National Cancer Institute. Duke University researcher Tommy Akinyemiju received a $50,000 grant from the V Foundation this year to look at the barriers at the patient, provider, and clinical levels that prevent black patients from receiving genomic testing, which can lead to better treatment options. Akinyemiju plans to gather data on these barriers and measure disparities among patients at the Duke Cancer Institute to develop a project she can then take to NIH for additional funding. Small grants like this go a long way to help us refine our idea, she says. Meanwhile, at UNC Chapel Hill, Dr. Carrie Lee, a medical oncologist, and Ashley Leek Bryant, an oncology nurse, received a grant from the V Foundation this year to look at methods of enhancing diversity among cancer treatment providers to help more patients who identify as Black, Indigenous, or a person of color feel more comfortable enrolling in oncology clinical trials. The money from the V Foundation will support an internship program that involves five students from NC Central University working at the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center over the next two summers. The long-term goal is that all five students accept positions at the center after earning their degrees. This funding is seed money for this project, which the UNC researchers plan to grow. We want to infuse and increase the workforce and make sure they are integrated within their own communities, Bryant says. Triangle schools play a role. The National Cancer Institute awards billions of dollars a year to researchers across the country, with much of this funding going to NCI-designated cancer centers. North Carolina has three, at Duke, UNC Chapel Hill, and Wake Forest Baptist. The National Cancer Act of 1971 established these centers to coordinate all the cancer-related activities on university campuses. The Duke Cancer Institute was one of the original eight centers established through this federal legislation and has received about $137.3 million for 322 projects from NCI over the last 3 years. This funding supports all types of cancer-related activities, from basic research in a lab to clinical trials and patient care, says Dr. Michael Kasdan, executive director of the Duke Cancer Institute. We want to make the discoveries and take the discoveries and develop them into better ways to diagnose and treat cancer, Kasdan says. More resources than ever are being poured into studying and developing drugs to treat cancer, but the money isn't stretching far enough, says Dr. Shelton Earp, director of the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. The UNC Center was among the second wave of cancer centers established in 1975. Between 2019 and 2021, the university received about $200 million for 426 projects from NCI. The number of researchers interested in studying cancer has outpaced the amount by which the federal government has raised NCI's budget, Earp says. NCI funding isn't the only source of cancer research dollars the universities receive. Other institutes within the NIH fund cancer research, as does the Department of Defense, the National Science Foundation, and companies. The Duke Cancer Institute's overall funding total is north of $100 million a year for its more than 300 research members, Kasdan says. A significant portion of the institute's funding also comes from industry-sponsored oncology clinical trials. Pharmaceutical and biotech companies are ramping up their efforts in this space, with the total number of oncology clinical trials reaching historic levels in 2021, according to a report by ICVIA, based in Durham, released in May. There were 2,335 oncology trials globally last year, up about 25% from the previous year and 56% from 2016. As clinical trials have increased, so have the number of cancer-related drug products in development. According to ICVIA's report, there are 2,197 oncology products in development, up from 870 in 2011. More than two-thirds of this pipeline is from emerging biopharma companies like many in the Triangle, including two that have completed sizable fundraises to advance their drug development efforts so far this year. In March, the precision oncology company Encyclix Bio raised $30 million in a Series B round that included participation from Eshelman Ventures of Wilmington. Eshelman Ventures, launched by PPD founder Fred Eshelman, led the company's $6 million raise that spurred its launch in 2020. More recently, Inceptor Bio raised $37 million in a Series A financing round led by the Raleigh-based investor, Kineticos Ventures. The money will support the company's efforts to develop multiple cell and gene therapy platforms targeting difficult-to-treat cancers. Triangle biotech veteran Shalish Manji founded Inceptor in 2020 to pursue cures to cancer. The company is doing so by focusing on what the CEO said represents the next wave of drug development. "We're in the early days of a 50-year run that will change the medical field," Manji said. Clinical researchers' hurdles. Clinical trials help bring new treatments to market, but they also give cancer patients early access to the most advanced therapies. Studies are also vital to a health center's business model by pulling in patients and generating revenue themselves. Some organizations, such as Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston and New York University Langone Health's Perlmutter Cancer Center, stayed on enrollment schedules throughout the pandemic, while others, including UCLA and Cleveland Clinic, saw hikes in enrollment. But many initially were forced to close parts of their research enterprises, whether because of infection risk, dwindling staff, or limited resources. Early reports showed enrollment for some dropped as much as 40% before bouncing back. And everyone had to adjust how they ran research without requiring frequent visits, in some cases across hundreds of miles to their campuses. They had to figure out how to ship drugs, enable electronic consent, and facilitate lab tests closer to home. Decentralized trials, which move more standardized elements of the process like blood work and imaging to local sites, enabled more people to stay on board. If we're able to retain some of those changes moving forward, said Dr. Grazgors Nowakowski, a Mayo Clinic hematologist, we could actually get more people on the clinical trials that benefit from the clinical trials in the first place. It's unclear how much longer we'll see this emergency easing of trial regulations, a disconcerting thought to Dr. Greg Bunnell, Dana-Farber's chief medical officer. We learned a lot in the last 2 years, and I fear that we may squander what little good could have come of this, he says. Labor challenges don't help. Trials have become increasingly complex in the past decade, requiring more training. COVID squeezed bandwidth, pulling away nurses and navigators involved in studies, while the Great Resignation drove a mass exodus from medical centers to higher-paying contract research organizations, and that has made both starting and enrolling for trials that much tougher. We've lost a lot of our clinical research staff, Kasdan says. Being able to work remotely, they can work for a company in the Bay Area and get paid twice as much and not have to move. The future of cancer care. Medicine today must meet patients where they are, experts agree. The cancer space is no exception. Regional health systems across the country are increasingly standing up their own cancer centers and practices, crucial for patients with straightforward cases in more rural and underserved areas. It's also good business. The drugs are costly and can be well reimbursed, making oncology one of the top revenue-producing service lines nationally. With an aging population, demand is rising for more care closer to home. Even the country's largest National Cancer Institute designated medical centers are looking to more permanently allow patients to get blood tests or imaging outside of their vaunted campuses. UCLA's Ambulatory Care Network has been expanding its footprint, now with 19 clinical oncology practices north and south of Los Angeles County. And the institution's clinical research unit, for example, expects to have a roughly $20 million budget for fiscal year 2023 to help open and operate new and ongoing trials across its network. Meanwhile, Dana-Farber just launched a pilot to bring oncology care to patients' homes. We think it's the right thing to do, says Bunnell of Dana-Farber. We're hoping the financial models will catch up or we'll be able to help create them. The push to reshape care mirrors similar efforts in clinical research. There's renewed interest in simplifying clinical trial design and eligibility criteria, given that the regulatory burdens on participants can often exacerbate health disparities between the haves and have-nots. Streamlining studies not only helps bolster recruitment and get treatments to patients faster, it also would make clinical trials much cheaper, and then the cost of developing a drug would be much lower, says Dr. Anthony Rebus, past president of the American Association for Cancer Research and chair of its COVID-19 and Cancer Task Force. Cancer centers are already working differently with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to meet requirements more in parallel to speed up the regulatory process. And with health equity as a priority, the FDA has introduced guidelines to include more underrepresented populations in trials to ensure the products being tested benefit the people who need them. Many health systems are carrying those teachings forward from the pandemic, notifying patients when they're due for appointments via personalized methods, using remote monitoring devices to record patient vitals and predict side effects, rethinking how they offer flexibility to employees, and working close to the digital divide so telehealth doesn't perpetuate the cancer disparity. When the scientific community and the industry join forces and aggressively try to do something, you have quick outcomes. I personally think this should happen in cancer too, said Dr. Leonidas Plantanius, director of Northwestern University's Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center. But compared to COVID, he added, cancer is much more complicated. For Mayo Clinic, it starts with making medical care more scalable with a combination of face-to-face and telehealth care. The pandemic clarified where we need to go as a healthcare system, McWilliam says. I think if you can take something positive away from a worldwide tragedy, that would be it. Sarah Gilgore also contributed to this report. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Atlantic Beach gets a remake. The part of Atlantic Beach near its well-known circle is about to undergo a major makeover. Atlantic Beach is upgrading its boardwalk after a design competition drew more than 50 contenders. The town settled on Kutunotuk Architecture and Landscaping Firm of Charlottesville, Virginia, which sketched out a sleek design that fits the aesthetic of the beach. Mayor Trace Cooper says the current boardwalk needs to be repaired, but beyond that, the town wanted to complement the private development that is changing the nature of the community. Kutunotuk designed a two-level boardwalk that also includes a new space for concerts and events. The overall look is modern but unpretentious. Cooper expects the new boardwalk to cost $2 million with a completion date of 2025. Cooper says Kutunotuk's approach was the beach was the star and what they were trying to do was complement the natural environment there. The move continues the evolution of Atlantic Beach. Decades back, the circle was the center of activity, with college kids toting long-neck Budweisers dancing to beach music at the Jolly Nave, while Marines from Camp Lejeune lounged on Camaros at the circle. Mobile homes and small concrete houses were common in Fort Macon Road. But interest in the circle lagged as swankier homes rose elsewhere. It will go back to being the town square or the downtown for Atlantic Beach, which is what it was for decades until a fall off in the 80s and 90s, Cooper says. Atlantic Beach is a favorite for vacationers from the Triangle. Cooper says 30% of the 5,000 housing units are owned by Wake County residents, and interest in the market is surging. This next iteration needs to be something that is a little nicer than it has been in the past, he says. That's what our visitors and our residents are expecting. Charlotte makes a play for life sciences jobs. Here at Biz, we are all for making fun of Charlotte, but Biz has to note a significant development in the Queen City region. On June 14, even Governor Roy Cooper was on hand for the groundbreaking in Concord on one of the Charlotte region's biggest economic development wins this year, and a win in an arena often dominated by the Triangle. Pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly and Company is developing a $1 billion campus with 600 jobs at a former Philip Morris site. Production is expected to start in 2024. It's an interesting and important move. Charlotte has long dominated the financial industry in the state, but is making a push to diversify its economic base as the Triangle hurtles forward in areas such as technology and life sciences. Charlotte officials hope the Eli Lilly investment will spur other life sciences companies to consider the region. Triangle labor market number 6 in U.S. The Triangle lands just outside of the top 5 life sciences labor markets in the U.S. in a report from the real estate firm CBRE. The area ranked number 6 in the firm's report of the top 25 life sciences labor markets, which it released June 12. Leading the country were Boston, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, New York, New Jersey, and San Diego. CBRE based its ranking on various factors, including the number of life sciences jobs and graduates in the market, how those numbers compare to the area's overall job and graduate pool, and the number of doctorate degree holders in life sciences. North Carolina Museum closes for renovations. Big changes are underway at the NC Museum of Art. The West Building, which houses the main collection, is closed until October 7 as the museum reimagines its collection. Traditionally, museums are organized by periods such as antiquities or Italian Renaissance or modern. The positives are that a visitor to a strong collection can follow how art evolved from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance and on to the Impressionists. But the NCMA began tweaking that in recent years under new director Valerie Hillings, putting artwork of similar genres but different periods on display together. Local firm designs Walmart project. A Durham firm has designed a swank new health and wellness facility for Walmart at the company's headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas. Duda Payne Architects designed a bright 360,000 square foot facility designed to integrate into the landscape around it. The facility includes 3 indoor pools as well as tennis, basketball, pickleball, pickleball courts, and more. Harris Alice Walton founded the Whole Health Institute in 2019, and the mission for the design was to follow its goals of improving the health and quality of life. And finally, commerce official makes a move. David Spratley, former North Carolina Commerce Senior Assistant Secretary of Finance, has joined the Raleigh office of Nexen Pruitt as Director of Economic Development. Spratley brings decades of experience, having helped to reel in mega projects over the years, such as Toyota and Apple, among his duties while at Commerce, incentives negotiations. Former Commerce Secretary John Scavarla is also a senior government relations advisor at the firm. And now we turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Industrial Revolution 2.0. Ali Batar and Usman Noor, co-owners of 8M Solar, have built a $12.5 million business on clean energy. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. We're living in the next industrial revolution, defined by the movement to renewable energy. That's what Ali Batar and Usman Noor will tell you, and they measure the success of their energy-producing company, 8M Solar, in megawatts, not dollars. 15 megawatts and counting, or around 70 million kilowatt hours of power annually. That's the impact 8M Solar has produced since its inception. It is the equivalent of 49,600 metric tons of carbon dioxide, or 5.5 million gallons of gasoline, 55 million pounds of coal, the usage at 6,249 homes for a year. It is substantial, they say, their enthusiasm prompting them to talk in tandem. All the solar we have installed has done this much good, Batar says. The measure I also like is the trees. 58,000 acres of forest could have sequestered this much carbon dioxide. Forests play a role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions by absorbing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This sequestering occurs naturally when carbon dioxide is stored through trees, root systems, soils, and the forest floor. In 2021, 8M Solar did about 5.4 megawatts of solar and $12.5 million in revenue. This year, the company is already at 3 megawatts in business, which stayed strong throughout the pandemic, continues to grow. Our main purpose has been to deploy solar to do the right thing with no cutting corners in the construction phases, Noor says. 8M Solar provides total turnkey solutions from evaluating sites to designing the best solution, estimating costs and ROI, and installing the solar panel system. Batar and Noor grew up in Pakistan and spent the first 2 years of college at the National University of Sciences and Technology in Islamabad before transferring to Cleveland State University in 2007 to complete their engineering degrees. Because of the expertise we have, Usman in automation engineering and I in solar engineering, Pakistan did not have these kinds of opportunities for things we could do with this knowledge, Batar says. My goal was to deploy more and more solar for the world. That is what is needed, and the opportunities were here. They felt North Carolina was a better choice for launching their solar business than Ohio because of the business climate as well as the growing appetite for sustainability. Among residential customers, which accounts for 70% of the business, they find a highly educated clientele of professionals who have often researched and self-educated themselves on the value of solar energy. We wanted to make the best of the American dream. We are very hopeful and we would love to see North Carolina carbon neutral in the next 2 or 3 decades. If the combined will is there, it is more than doable, Batar says. Among local municipalities, manufacturing firms, and triangle firms, especially those with European headquarters, the will is strong and the appetite for renewable energy is on full display. I was just at one of our projects at a new fire station in Durham. The city of Durham is mandating solar on these buildings, and we are also working with the city on their general services department building, Noor says. There is a drive in these governments to make buildings sustainable, and it is more prevalent than it was a few years ago. We did a bunch of buildings for Orange County, and we have 10 sites underway with the Wake County government. We work with all kinds of commercial, government, and manufacturing firms like Caterpillar and Clayton and Tyson Chicken Farms in the Yadkin Valley. It is so easy to install solar systems on these buildings. They have empty real estate on the roof and might as well use it. Commercial customers are using that real estate for a lucrative return on investment. At the Tyson Chicken Farms, 8M Solar installed 350 to 400 kilowatts worth of solar. It's making 90% of their power, and it paid for itself in 2 years because they had the USDA grant available and there was a Duke utility rebate that they qualified for as well, Noor adds. Commercial projects will typically realize an ROI in 5 to 10 years, the longest time frame estimated at 12 to 13 years. For all the positives coming out of their business, the sunny prospects are clouded by supply chain disruptions and inflation. There are two or three layers to the supply chain issues, Batar says, noting first the disruptions from the pandemic. Our people are actively looking at sourcing daily to be ahead of the game. The other layer to this is that a small solar panel manufacturer, Auxin Solar in California, filed a complaint with the Department of Commerce that most of the solar panels being sold in America had bypassed the tariffs that were imposed to Chinese businesses. The DOC opened an investigation into the matter, and that threw the whole solar industry into a tailspin. That conundrum went into a holding pattern on June 6 when the Biden administration declared a 24-month tariff moratorium on solar panels manufactured in Southeast Asia, specifically in Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, or Vietnam. The National Law Review reported that this executive action is in response to concerns of the U.S. solar industry and the ensuing DOC investigation into whether solar panels imported from those countries actually originated in China, in which case they could be subject to retroactive tariffs of up to 250%. NLR also noted that while companies may be subject to tariffs after the 24-month period ends, U.S. companies will be exempt from any retroactive tariffs. Damage has already been done, however, in the form of industry-wide price increases. Solar prices kept falling from 2010 to 2020, literally year over year. We always had a decrease in prices, which meant more proliferation of solar in our neighborhood, so more clean energy in our communities and more sustainability in our households, Noor explains. In 2021 and 2022, we got back-to-back increases, so we are reversing the decades-long trend of solar access to middle-income families. We're making solar energy into a niche product just by the way this whole politics is playing out. Closer to home, proposed changes in the utility sector are creating consternation as well. This thing with Duke Energy wanting to change the rules of interconnection is another tailwind we are working with, Batar says. All of the solar companies have joined together and petitioned the state attorney general and the governor to work with us to try to make the rules they are trying to impose more friendly on everybody. The North Carolina Utilities Commission tells Triangle Business Journal it has received more than 300 consumer statements regarding Duke Energy's request to modify the Net Energy Metering, or NEM, rules, including comments from the public staff, which represents the consuming public in Utility Commission's hearing or proceedings. One of the recent comments filed May 27 noted, "The proposed NEM tariffs would de-incentivize the installation of rooftop solar and reduce the economic value of rooftop solar for NEM customers by about 30%. Batar and Noor agree that the proposed NEM rules would have that much, if not more, economic impact, but in their estimation, the biggest deterrent to renewable energy in the Triangle is homeowner associations. It's not the politicians, it's your neighbors that are stopping solar. A lot of HOAs in the Triangle won't allow solar panels," Batar says. "In certain cases, that makes sense," Noor notes. "If a townhome has shared roofs, it makes sense. But in a single-family detached home, it is baffling that an HOA can stop the installation of solar panels." And we have a couple of news items in the 52 Shades of Success section. Non-white school districts show $23 billion funding disparity. In its recent report, Best States for Racial Equality in Education, research analyst WalletHub noted that non-white school districts across the U.S. receive $23 billion less in funding per year than predominantly white school districts. To establish the ranking, the data compared differences in white and black Americans in metrics such as degrees earned, test scores, and graduation rates. Wyoming ranked best in the country based on the similarity in the share of whites and blacks with a high school degree, and that there was only 5 percentage points difference in the share of those populations that have a bachelor's degree. North Carolina ranked number 25 in the nation. Raleigh Pride returns to in-person celebration. The official 10-year anniversary of Out Raleigh Pride will be held June 25 on Fayetteville Street in downtown Raleigh. The event, which raises funds to support the LGBT Center of Raleigh as well as its community programs, will be an inclusive and family-friendly celebration that includes live entertainment, artists, a kid zone, and a beer garden. The last few years have been difficult not having the festival, as it has historically been held on Fayetteville Street, but I'm incredibly proud of my team for what we were able to accomplish, stated Corey Hennessy, Director of Education and Programs at the LGBT Center of Raleigh and Festival Director for Out Raleigh Pride. More than 50 local, regional, and national businesses and organizations have signed on to sponsor the event, which is open to the public free of charge. For information, visit outraleigh.com. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Economic Development page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Growing Durham startup acquired. Kansas-based tech firm snaps up Archive Social parent. More than a decade after he left IBM to launch a startup, a Triangle entrepreneur's journey has taken a big leap. Optimere, a Durham-based provider of digital compliance and records management software, has been acquired by Kansas-based Civic Plus in a deal that includes Archive Social, part of the recently formed Optimere brand. Anil Chawla, who founded Archive Social and is now executive chairman of Optimere, says he never expected the journey to look like this when he started Archive Social in 2011. Absolutely not, he says. This is the story you kind of wanted to write, but you don't even know how you can take it there. Early on, we took it day by day, then quarter by quarter. As you get bigger, you take it year by year. Optimere CEO Ray Carey calls it a perfect match. If you designed in a lab a company that sold to the same customers but had zero product overlap, you would come up with this combination, Carey says. Financial details were not disclosed. Optimere has 112 employees in the Triangle. Chawla was one of the first graduates of the now shuttered The Startup Factory at Durham's American Underground. A decade ago, Chawla left a stable job at IBM to take a chance on his idea. The technology provided a record of social media posts long before former President Donald Trump began making policy pronouncements on Twitter. In 2014, the firm was at 7 employees, a win at a $100,000 pitch competition that came with an endorsement from AOL co-founder Steve Case, helped it grow to 25 in 2016. In 2019, the firm had 65 employees and a transformative opportunity, Level Equity. The growth equity firm agreed to a $53 million deal, one that both cashed out early backers and helped propel the firm forward. 6 months ago, Archive Social combined with other firms, Montecito and Next Request, to rebrand as digital compliance firm Optimere. Startup's story involves a beloved coach, NC State football, and magnets. The idea for Magna Ready has its roots in a football locker room at NC State University. Maura Horton's late husband, Wolfpack offensive line coach Don Horton, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease at age 48. One day he was stuck in a locker room, unable to get dressed. His fingers just weren't working that day, Maura Horton recalls. Russell Wilson, the Wolfpack star quarterback from 2007 to 2010, who's now with the Denver Broncos in the NFL, helped coach Horton get dressed in silence. My husband told me he had a hard day, Maura Horton says. She wanted to help, so she turned to the internet looking for products that could help, and there was nothing available, she says. So Horton leveraged her design background and invented a solution, magnetic clothing, to make it easier for people with limited mobility to get dressed. Don Horton died in 2016. In 2019, she sold the firm to David Pazer Sportswear of New York. Horton declined to comment on the terms. Horton is still company president, still running the firm, from Raleigh. More than 40 auto projects targeting NC. VinFast on Toyota could be just the beginning of a string of automotive projects coming to the Tar Heel State. As activity ticks up among firms looking to expand or relocate operations in the state, automotive companies keep looking at North Carolina, according to Christopher Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. Automotive is now a leading sector of activity for us, he says. I suspect this is being driven by continued activity in electric vehicles and EV-adjacent industries. In a section called He Said It, a quote from Scott Bledsoe, founder and president of Morrisville's Blue Force Technologies, on the Fury, an unmanned aircraft designed to train top fighter pilots. Blue Force has been awarded a $50 million contract with the U.S. Air Force to build 4 Fury aircraft. If you've seen the original Top Gun movie, it's the idea that you need a way to train the best of the best fighter pilots with an airplane that can emulate what the enemy can do. That's basically what it does. And finally, a big number, $2.7 million, the amount the federal government is sending to Johnston County to support the infrastructure for a huge Amazon facility that's expected to create 500 jobs. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. New name for tower for NC State football, Town Bank, to replace Vaughn name at Carter-Finley Stadium. When football fans flock to NC State University's Carter-Finley Stadium this fall, a new name towering above the grounds will greet the patrons. Town Bank has forged a deal with the university to have its name on what is currently called the C. Richard Vaughn Towers. The university's Board of Trustees approved the new naming rights partner during a meeting earlier this year. At the April NC State University Board of Trustees meeting, the board approved the renaming of Vaughn Towers to Town Bank Center in recognition of a $5 million philanthropic gift in an agreement that will last 10 years, confirmed Brad Bolander, the university's chief communications officer. NC State Athletics is excited to make a formal announcement with additional details in the near future, he says. Town Bank officials would not comment on the deal. Town Bank made its name in the Raleigh-Durham market after the Hampton Roads, Virginia-based bank bought Raleigh's Paragon Bank for $324 million in 2017. The Vaughn Towers name will be removed from its current location, according to multiple sources familiar with university affairs. But sources also added that the university is working with C. Richard Vaughn, a Mount Airy resident who got his degree in nuclear engineering from NC State, to see if there could be an alternate way to keep the Vaughn name on the premises. The 117,000-square-foot Vaughn Towers facility has 51 private luxury suites with climate control, television, a soda beverage bar, and hot meals. It includes 1,000 outdoor seats that face the field on a game day. Inside the Vaughn Towers reside the Chancellor Suite, Media Center, a 12,000-square-foot single-floor private luxury area called the Curtis and Jacqueline Dale Club, Dial Club, D-A-I-L, and the Foundation Suite, which comprises a double suite for patrons. The facility opened in 2005. RTI lands $260 million contract to study drug use. RTI International has landed a contract with a federal agency to gather data on substance use and mental illness. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in May awarded the nonprofit research institution in Research Triangle Park a contract to complete the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, NSDUH, annually from 2023 through 2027. The survey of about 70,000 U.S. residents 12 years and older provides policymakers, healthcare professionals, researchers, and others with information on issues related to mental health and the use of tobacco, alcohol, and drugs nationwide. RTI has worked with the agency, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, on this project since 1988. The results are intended to inform public health programs and policies. The NSDUH program is a foundational plank in our nation's public health data infrastructure and has been a cornerstone of RTI's survey research offerings for decades, said Tim Gable, president and CEO of RTI. Novan raises $15 million seeking FDA approval. A Durham pharmaceutical company has raised $15 million as it prepares to seek regulatory approval for its lead product candidate. Novan, which is developing nitric oxide-based therapeutics, sold common stock and warrants to an investor to generate proceeds that, along with existing cash, will support the company's efforts to submit a new drug application to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration by the end of the year. The lead product candidate in the company's pipeline is SB206, a topical gel intended to treat a viral skin infection called molluscum contagiosum. The company added commercial products to its portfolio through an acquisition earlier this year. And in a quote in a section called He Said It, it's from Dr. Mark Goldberg, CEO of the contract research organization All Lucent, on the guidance of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration released earlier this year aimed at improving diversity among clinical trial participants. You're not performing the right science if you don't have the right sample. And finally, a big number, $18.9 million. The amount Raleigh startup Gemelli Biotech has raised in equity from more than 100 investors, according to June 8 filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The company, which focuses on developing precision diagnostics for gastrointestinal diseases, could raise another $1.1 million in the round. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromet. The main headline, Publix finally lands in North Durham. Grocer is a key part of 30-acre project that includes townhomes. Developers say a 30-acre project in North Durham will be anchored by a grocery chain that's growing fast in the Triangle. Though plans for a Publix at the site at the intersection of Guess and Lotta Roads were rejected in previous years, the Florida-based grocer is now set to anchor a new mixed-use development. A rezoning has been approved for the site, allowing retail along with up to 207 townhomes. The new development is named Latta Park, L-A-T-T-A. Developed by Crossland Southeast and TriPoint Homes, the property will feature over 175 townhomes and nearly 55,000 square feet of retail space. The development will be a, quote, walkable planned community, unquote, with construction beginning in early 2023. The public space will measure 41,744 square feet. It will be surrounded by more retail in a park-like setting with community green space, trails, public art features, and a food truck terrace. We're thrilled to provide Northern Durham with an excellent grocer like Publix, as well as high-quality local restaurants and curated shops walkable to surrounding neighborhoods and the future residents within the development, says Austin Williams, partner at Crossland Southeast. In 2017, the Durham City Council denied a rezoning request meant to allow a mixed-use development at the same intersection. The proposed North River Village project featured a 66,000-square-foot retail center anchored by Publix and about 60 single-family housing lots. The Charlotte-based developer purchased the 14 parcels of land that make up the site on April 29 from various owners for over $3 million, deed records show. Crossland, which also has a Raleigh office, then sold about two-thirds of the land to an LLC in partnership with California-based TriPoint Homes for just under $6 million. Following the rejection of the Publix anchor development in 2017, the Florida-based grocer announced plans to instead open in the marketplace at Ellis Crossing Shopping Center in Durham. Publix has signed a lease for the space located near Research Triangle Park, about a 15- to 20-minute drive from Latta Park. Publix has grown its Triangle presence to more than 10 stores. Carrie's Fenton lands Italian restaurant. Coletta, an Italian concept by acclaimed restaurateur Steve Palmer, will take up 4,000 square feet in Carrie's Fenton mixed-use development. The restaurant has a projected opening of July 15. The restaurant will feature pasta made in-house and for the table, family-style options. Dishes will include classics along with more adventurous plates like beef cheek agnolotti. The build-out will cost $3.2 million, Palmer says. Oscar Nappi will serve as executive chef. Palmer's Indigo Road Hospitality entered the Triangle in 2018 with the opening of Oku Sushi, followed by Oak Steakhouse. Palmer, based in Charleston, South Carolina, came to Raleigh after noticing a spike in chef-owned concepts. Scott Crawford is one of my best friends. I'm good buddies with Ashley Christensen, he says. With Lantern, Bill Smith, and Ben Barker, there's always been a rich history of food in the Triangle. Moore wins James Beard honor. Chef Ricky Moore, who owns Saltbox Seafood Joint in Durham, was honored on June 13 as Best Chef Southeast in the 2022 James Beard Awards. Shout out Bull City, Durham, North Carolina, Moore said as he took the stage in Chicago. It's a beautiful thing to be recognized for what I'm doing, he added. Chubby's Tacos opens new location. Raleigh-based Chubby's Tacos, with two restaurants in the Triangle, is now expanding with a Chubby's Taco Stand concept. The location is 1,600 square feet in Raleigh's Sutton Square Shopping Center on Falls of Neuse Road. The new location serves tacos, nachos, and quesadillas. The interior is designed to make patrons feel like they've stepped foot into Oaxaca, Mexico, says Rudy Thiel, head of business development. And finally, He Said It section, the quote from Greg Lowe, CEO of Wolfspeed, on being named the chair for the board of directors for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. I'm really looking forward to a great 3 years at the Rock Hall. And now we turn to the On Business page, written by Elizabeth Egan. The first headline, Sanford adds even more pharma jobs. Global Pharma opens $100 million facility in growing region. A global pharmaceutical company has officially opened its new manufacturing facility in Sanford. The facility, part of Astellas Gene Therapies, will contain both clinical and commercial manufacturing with the goal of developing safe and effective gene therapies as efficiently as possible, according to the company. And that's spelled A-S-T-E-L-L-A-S, Astellas Gene Therapies. The $109 million, 209-job operation is the second large-scale facility for Astellas Gene Therapies and the first outside California. The facility totals 135,000 square feet, located at 6074 Enterprise Park Drive, north of downtown Sanford. The new plant adds to the rapid pace of investment and development in Sanford as the Triangle's growth stretches outward from the urban cores. Plans for the facility were announced in February 2020 by Audentes Therapeutics of San Francisco, which has since been acquired by Astellas Pharma, a multinational company based in Japan. Matthew Pletcher, Senior Vice President and Division Head of Gene Therapy Research and Technical Operations, says the company chose Sanford for two main reasons. It provides enough space to build and grow in the future, and there's already a skilled workforce in the area, illustrated by other gene therapy companies choosing the Triangle for manufacturing operations. Pletcher says UNC Chapel Hill, NC State University, and Duke University were all involved in the early stages of developing gene therapy technologies and have provided a wealth of talent to the area. Yes, it does create competition, but I think it also creates a fantastic training ground to continue to nurture and build all that skill that already exists there, primarily coming out of the academic research centers in the Research Triangle that have been for a long time the innovators of gene therapy, he says. Pletcher says the firm has hired around 50 employees for the site so far. He says that as more manufacturing moves to the state, the hiring will match that need. When Audentes selected Sanford for the site, the company also considered locations in California and Colorado. It said average salaries would be $83,900. Raleigh among leaders in home building. Raleigh is among the U.S. markets building the most new homes, but the pace isn't fast enough to stop prices from rising rapidly amid low inventory. Research from online real estate brokerage Redfin Corporation shows the Raleigh Metro had the second most single-family building permits per capita among major U.S. metros in the first quarter of 2022, trailing only Austin, Texas. Raleigh had 30.7 building permits per 10,000 residents, while Austin had 31.1. Charlotte also made the top five, behind Jacksonville, Florida, and Nashville, Tennessee, with 22.9 permits. Metros across the Sun Belt rounded out the top 10. Phoenix, 22.7. Houston, 22.4. Orlando, Florida, 20.3. Dallas, 18.5. And Las Vegas, 17.2. According to Redfin, home builders are focused on Sun Belt markets because of their attractiveness to new residents, particularly due to affordability and warm weather. Ex-finance director charged. The former finance director of a town outside Fayetteville has been arrested months after the state took over the town's finances. A federal indictment alleges Gay Cameron Tucker embezzled more than $500,000 from Spring Lake as finance director and accounting technician. The charges allege Tucker used fraudulent checks with forged signatures of the mayor and town manager. Last fall, after months of investigation, the state took over the town's finances over concerns it would default on its debts. Tucker's arrest June 10 comes after the Office of the State Auditor released a report in March alleging a former town employee used over $430,000 in town funds for personal use. And in a section called She Said It, a quote from Jacqueline Smith, River Wild co-founder on O'Neill Overlook, a 37-home subdivision in downtown Clayton. People are looking for downtown residential space where they can leave their cars at home and walk or bike to destinations like restaurants and shopping. And we have a notable number, 7%. The amount of population growth Apex experienced from April 2020 to July 2021, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, Apex had the 10th largest growth rate in the country and the largest in North Carolina among municipalities of 50,000 people or more. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Time to Protect Against Liens, Lawsuits. The early bird catches the worm. We all know what that means, but in corporate America, that is particularly true when the perception starts building up that the economy is heading towards some serious choppy waters. So, who is the bird here? Entities who are owed money, that's who. Banks, professional service providers, holders of work contracts, patent holders, and debt investors. As history has repeatedly shown us, the rush to get in line to get paid and essentially draw down the accounts receivable is about to go into hyperdrive. No one wants to be left behind when it comes to getting paid. That's because corporate bankruptcies will start to rise, foreclosures are on their way up, and credit lines are being pared down by lenders. One does not have to look any further than the fledgling cryptocurrency market that is about to enter its first pre-recession ecosystem. Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency, has shed about half its value this year. Since its record high of $69,000 in November, it has slumped nearly 70%. And Coinbase, the crypto exchange, laid off 18% of its workforce on June 14, citing possible recession. On the same day, real estate firms Compass and Redfin announced layoffs. Not surprisingly, the Federal Reserve's wish to slow business activity is about to come true. Businesses that preemptively start the process of communicating with their vendors, suppliers, and lenders to ascertain the needs and wants of either party will come out ahead in the end. But are we ringing these warning bells too soon? After all, unlike the previous two recessions, 2001 and 2007, large public companies and consumer-sensitive industries such as banking and housing are in a far better place than in the previous downturns. The issue at hand this time around is inflation. The Fed wants to tighten its monetary policy, as evidenced by its action this week, but the worry is what happens if Chairman Jerome Powell inadvertently over-tightens the economy. The result? Recession. Consumers are the backbone of the American economy. Given the inflation rate, prices have gone up, especially in oil and food, and the dialing back of expenses has started. One only has to look at the latest guidance posted by retail giants such as Target, Walmart, and Amazon to come to that conclusion. With the labor market strong and most companies acknowledging the three finite elements creating the current environment, inflation, supply chain woes, and the Russia-Ukraine war, the palpable nervousness from the American consumer is muted. So there are some making the argument that supply chain issues will sort themselves out, bringing down the cost of goods, and the Fed is boldly attacking inflation, which will correct the market trends by the year's end. If the pundits are correct in their observation, the question remains, should businesses just wait and see and ride out the economic headwinds? That may make sense for well-capitalized and profit-rich companies in the short run, but leveraged concerns and corporations using debt to grow are facing a far different scenario. And just like the past recessions, companies with the least leverage will come out as winners because opportunities to get bigger by acquiring the competition are likely to emerge soon. But for most companies, what they have to worry about are lawsuits. A detailed look at the effects of bankruptcy and recession by the American Bar Association explains the use of bankruptcy laws by consumers and companies when economic activity is faltering. In almost all cases, depending on what type of bankruptcy was filed by the petitioner, debtor payments are halted or restructured. Thankfully, we are not at a point when boardrooms and conference rooms are filled with talk of bankruptcy yet, but we are at a point to pay closer attention to our accounts receivable. As they say, the early bird catches the worm. And now we turn to a general news story in the Triangle Business Journal. Raleigh Hoteliers' loss won't end fight over insurance claims, written by Lauren Onisorge. A federal appeals court has sided against a hospitality group in Raleigh by allowing a decision to dismiss a case involving COVID-19 business interruption claims to stand. Summit Hospitality had sued the Cincinnati Insurance Company in federal court, challenging its decision not to compensate it for pandemic losses in 2020. Summit was one of several firms suing over what's known as business interruption insurance. Summit's lengthy hotel portfolio includes hotels such as AC by Marriott Raleigh Downtown and the Residence Inn Chapel Hill. It also owns Raleigh's Midtown Grill in North Hills and the Asbury in Charlotte. When shutdown orders went into effect in 2020, some businesses thought that would trigger a business interruption claim, the type of policies that often go into effect when disasters such as hurricanes level a business. In the case of Summit, a U.S. District Court previously ruled against the company. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit upheld that ruling June 9. Business interruption cases, at least in federal court, have largely been unsuccessful. But federal courts follow state law when it comes to insurance matters, meaning the final say could be handed down in Raleigh. In 2020, 16 restaurants, including local eateries fronted by acclaimed Triangle chefs Matt Kelly, Georgios Bakatsias, Jay Medellin, and Laszlo Lukacsi, got a key win in a separate case in state court against the same insurance company. Cincinnati Insurance appealed, and the case is now in front of the state appeals court with a decision expected any day. Gagan Gupta, the painter law attorney representing a group of Triangle restaurants in that case, says Summit and firms like it should be paying attention. The Fourth Circuit has been ruling on these cases, but these cases are ultimately a question of state law, he says, adding that there are cases in courts across the Fourth Circuit that will soon make the decisions that will ultimately be binding and the final say, he says. Just days before the latest ruling, appeals courts filed opinions against policyholders in six other cases regarding business interruption claims. The insurance industry has repeatedly pushed back against these types of cases, including in North Carolina, where Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey has said standard business interruption policies aren't designed to cover pandemics. Apartments net huge price. Los Angeles investor sells Raleigh apartments for a whopping $165 million. This is written by Cliff Barnes. A bombshell multifamily deal for luxury apartments in Raleigh just months ago was called one of the biggest ever in the Triangle area. Now that same property has sold for nearly $40 million more. Los Angeles-based Mount Auburn Multifamily in May sold the 45 acres containing the luxury apartments at Foxwood for just over $165 million, or about $358,800 per unit, after having purchased the property last December for $126 million, according to Wake County deed records. Starwood Capital Group, a private investment firm based in Miami with a focus on global real estate, bought the 460-unit apartment complex located on two tracts of land at 6701 Fox Road and 7061 Fox Meadow Lane, just outside Interstate 540 and not far from the Triangle Town Center Mall. The mega deal comes as rents continue to climb in the Triangle and across the country, causing multifamily investors to spend big bucks acquiring properties. Data from ApartmentList.com shows rent is up more than 28% in Raleigh over the last 2 years, with the average rent coming in at $1,500 per month. And we'll move to the end of the article for one last bit of information. Rent on a one-bedroom, one-bath, 800-square-foot apartment at Luxury Apartments at Foxwoods starts at $1,427 per month. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print-impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.